When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So let me ask you this. Why do you think he punches that paper towel dispenser?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And I don't think I have a definitive answer. I mean, I think that there's the obvious answer that he thought he was going to die and he was okay with that. And this complicates things for him.
yeah.
And I think, like, if I just have to... I mean, if I just look at it, at the whole picture that it's painting, I mean, I think a lot about the idea of whenever he has this reason, it makes everything that he's doing different. You know, it's all in reference to that. Whereas if you take that away, then he has to sort of look at himself as this is what I'm doing. And there's no excuse anymore. It's just who he's become. So, yeah, I think what I like about this is that I do think, and this is something that you've mentioned before in previous podcasts, that, you know, he was sort of resigned to his fate, like, you know, this death sentence he has, and he was comfortable with that. I think it manages to be more than that at the same time, which is really interesting, because from this point forward, at least... based on, you know, everything that led to this and not even taking into consideration what happens after, but just this moment for this character after he just went through this episode, you know,
it does
change, you know, before you sort of watched him react to things and you kind of can figure out why he did what he did. Now that the character doesn't have that same motivation, it really makes you think about things a little bit differently.
Agreed with everything you just said. So I think this really does support that theory that this was a man resigned to death and now he knows he's going to live. And I think of a couple things, right? I think of that hope button, right?
Yeah.
And how he threw that away. And where we leave off at this episode, even though they go through a lot of trials and tribulations along the way, he gets what he ultimately wanted, right? He gets that money. He's going to have something to be able to leave behind for his family. Everything's all, you know, as far as he's concerned, packaged and neat and tidy. And he's ready to lay down, right? And he was so sure that what he saw in that x-ray was cancer. And, you know, the expedience of getting this done was all the more urgent for him, of course. And then to be told that, as Dr. Delcavoldi says it, signs of remission, and what that does for him now is gives him more time. I think that's just something that he never considered. He really didn't allow himself to think that far into the future. And a couple of other things that occurred to me watching this, when he punches the paper towel dispenser, of course, I'm reminded of Jimmy McGill in Better Call Saul and his trash can. And I'll say more about that later. But something else is when he pulls his fists away and he's looking at that distorted reflection of himself, you notice his knuckle prints and they're bloody on the paper towel dispenser. So you have the traces of blood there. And I feel like that in a way I don't know if they did this intentionally, but in the very final episode of the series in Felina, when he is in that makeshift lab at Jack's place, you remember the last thing he does before he drops dead? He touches that vat and he leaves that bloody handprint on
that
metallic
true,
surface.
Yeah.
So let me also ask you this other question. Are you familiar with... the idea of remission of sin? Have you ever heard that expression?
I can't think of anything. No, I don't think I've ever heard that. I mean, obviously putting those two words together, it gives me an idea of what it's about, but I don't know where it comes from.
So in Catholicism, there's what's called an indulgence, which is a way to reduce the amount of punishment one has to undergo for their sins. And The Catechism specifically of the Catholic Church describes an indulgence as a remission before God of the temporal punishment due to sins whose guilt has already been forgiven, which the faithful Christian who is duly disposed gains under certain prescribed conditions through the action of the church, yada, 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 mm-hmm. right? So this idea of remission of sin is, in other words, it's like the act of absolution or remitting. To remit sin is to become free of sin. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking of this in terms of like this little, that little, it's not a confession, but it is a moment where they're in the RV and he's, you know, lying there and he says to Jesse, I deserve this. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking of like, we're going to get more into this in just a second after, you know, we wrap this up.
Yes, but we surely
this,
will.
I just want to leave you with this idea though, that he is actually acknowledging his sin here or his wrongdoing. Like uh-huh. there is a little bit of acknowledgement of what he has done.
Definitely.
All right. 16,000 laundered at 75 cents on the dollar minus my fee, which is 17%, comes to $9,960. Congratulations. You just left your family a secondhand Subaru.
Let's just have to cook more, a lot more.
Yeah. That's my legal opinion.
This is Growth Decay Transformation, a Breaking Bad Rewatch podcast. I'm Courtney.
And I'm Pete.
And today we're going to be talking about 4 Days Out. Pete, you got a synopsis for us?
Yep. And I think I can get through this one pretty quickly. Walt goes for a round of tests to see if the treatment is working. He won't hear from the doctor for 4 days, but on his way out, he sees a reflection of the scan in like a picture that's hanging on the wall or something like that. And he notices that there's a large white area right on his lung. He goes to see Saul, who introduces him to the money laundering process. He finds out after all the setbacks, he still only has $9,960 to leave behind for his family. At home, Skyler suggests they do something together over the weekend to get his mind off the test results. But he tells her he needs to go visit his mother to make sure that she'll help out the family if anything happens to him. Jesse and Jane make plans to visit the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum in Santa Fe, but that's interrupted when Walt calls and lies, saying that they have to cook right now because the methylamine that they have will go bad if they don't. They go off into the desert where things start off really well. I mean, they make 42 pounds of meth in just a couple of days, and after Walter does the math, they realize that that will net them $672,000 each, which is really close to that number of 737 that he's shooting for. After that, though, things go wrong. The generator runs out of gas, and when they decide to go into town for the night, like to take a night off, they realize that because Jesse left the keys in the ignition, the battery is now dead. Walt connects the wrong cables when they try to charge it using the battery and a fire starts. Jesse uses the last of their water to put that out. And when they call Skinny Pete, he agrees to come, but he never finds his way there. And as they try things that don't work, Walt starts coughing up blood. After Jesse realizes the methylamine story was a lie, and Walt gets uncharacteristically honest, which we were just talking about in the teaser there, he talks about that harm that he's caused, and he kind of takes responsibility for it. He comes up with an idea to make a battery with things they have around the RV. Spare change, was it anything made out of zinc? Galvanized, yeah. This works, and they do make it out. And when they get to the airport, Jesse promises Walt to get his share to his family no matter what happens. Then, at the doctor's office with his entire family there, Walt learns that his cancer is in remission and his tumor has shrunk by 80%, which means that there's really no question that, you know, he is getting better for the time being. The cough turned out to be related to the treatment. and the blood was likely from a tear in his esophagus. That takes us to the end of the episode where we just talked about Walt is in the bathroom, and as he's drying his hands, he looks up and sees his reflection, and that sets him off, and he basically unloads and pummels the towel dispenser, and then it cuts to black.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so another classic episode here. This one has, I think, a lot of peak Walt and Jesse banter and is a great illustration of how they go about problem solving and trying to figure out how they're going to get out of this situation. I heard that Aaron Paul has said that this is his favorite episode, and that's not surprising. This is a really good one. And upon rewatch, I definitely see a lot of connections to Better Call Saul. So some are really obvious, like that shot of Walt standing in front of the Albuquerque airport. We see Kim in the exact same place in Waterworks when she goes back to Albuquerque. Of course, the idea of being stranded in the desert. We see Jimmy and Mike get stranded in the desert. But then there are some more subtle similarities, like Jesse's talking about having to drink your own urine, which I forgot about until rewatching this. He's telling Walt about how he watched like National Geographic or something, and the guy said it tasted like hot old soda.
Yeah.
But also,
he says that like it's some big revelation. Like, you know,
yeah.
I really love that, the way that he throws that in there.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I was thinking, like, why didn't they show them drinking their own urine or trying to make water with their lab or something like that? But I guess they amended that in Better Call Saul, where we do get to see that. And then, of course, another similarity is one I already alluded to, and that's with Walt punching that paper towel dispenser and Jimmy taking his frustration out on the trash can. And that scene of Walt punching the paper towel dispenser is one that has always stayed with me. I've always thought about that question that I asked you, Pete, like, why does he do it? And as we already discussed, I think it really does show us that this was a man who was really just resigned to die. He was ready to go. What about you? What did you think about this one?
Yeah, I really love this episode. And I agree that the Better Call Saul connections are pretty overwhelming in this one. I don't think I ever, I guess individually I knew all those things were there, but just having seen Saul's introduction last week, a brief look at him here in this episode, and then, yeah, they just start jumping out at you when you watch it this time. Also, Walt's appearance in El Camino, that is a shot that fills in the blanks on what happened between, you know, when they get the RV started and Jesse takes him back to the airport. So that's an interesting connection there, too. And this is another one of those episodes that's just beautiful. Like, you just, there's so many good transitions and different things. Just a lot of those wide shots and great shots of the desert. This is the first one that Michelle McLaren directed. And you could see why they relied on her so many times after this, you know, going forward in the series. She's really involved from this point on. And that was a great decision. And you can see, you know, where they got the idea at when you watch this episode. The setup of Walt thinking that he has, you know, only a few, like he says that he has weeks, I think, at one point in this episode. And he really believes that, you know, the coughing has been increasing. You know, we see it, you know, produce blood here at one point. And obviously seeing that reflection of the scan, you know, it does make sense for him to be more desperate than usual. And then they resolve everything quite neatly by the end of this episode. So, you know, it should be victorious when we get to that paper towel scene that we've been talking about. I mean, and I agree, that is like an all-timer Breaking Bad moment. You know, that's up there, as far as I'm concerned, that's up there with Crawl Space and some of those other really, you know, memorable scenes that you just can't forget about when you think about this series. And, like I said, I agree that it does, you know, hint at him being resigned to his death sentence, but it manages to be so many, you know, so much more at the same time. And, it really is a great moment to bring us into the, you know, the final phase of this season. So it's exciting.
It really is, right? And thinking about the structure of this episode and how they set up the timeline, right? Like where we begin in the doctor's office, and then we end in the doctor's office, and then the 4 days out, of course, being a reference to how long he has to wait to get his test results, but also how long they're stuck out in the desert. And he thinks he has time to cook and, as we said, get everything in order to be able to die and leave something for his family. But this idea of like distorted reflections, I think, is something that mm-hmm. is another way that they bookend this episode. So he sees the reflection of his CT scan in the picture on the wall behind the tech, and he misinterprets it, right? And I think mm-hmm. they do a great job setting that up with the conversation that the whole family has in the waiting room, where Maria is talking about how, like, you know, it's not that difficult to read it. I could read it. You know, we could take text, could take one look and know exactly what's going on. So with that in mind, right, like,
you know, you guys don't have to stay if you don't want to. You can go ahead.
Yeah. So Walt is now, he's received this information, like, it's not really hard to read. Like, it's an obvious thing to be able to look at. Yeah. So then he sees that. And of course, you see this big scary blob on your lung, and he's been coughing a lot. And, where is his mind going to go? Of course, it's going to go to.
Yeah, there is no scenario. Other. There is no other conclusion to be drawn there. You see a big giant white blob, you think, I'm dying, right?
I mean,
that's the context of why he's there, is to find out if things got better, and they visibly got worse as far as what he can tell. So yeah, it's a perfect setup.
Yeah. And then when he's lying in bed later with Skylar, and she's, you know, asking, let's do something this weekend to get our mind off of it. And then that's when he says he wants to go see his mom, but of course that's just his cover so he can go cook with Jesse. But I think it's, again, one of those rare moments where he's being honest, apart from the fact that he's lying about where he's going, but that he really thinks the news is going to be bad. He really does believe the news is going to be bad. And something that he says to her really struck me about how he's going to earn every penny of it. Because, again, he's going to say that he's going to get money from his mom to make sure that it's left for Skylar. So we're led to assume, right, the money that he's making with Jesse, he's going to say is from his mother. That's going to be his cover of how they're getting this money. Because if you'll remember the conversation he has with Saul, he's like, she's not stupid. You know, I can't just, yeah. You know. So this is part of that cover story as well. And I thought their conversation about his mother was really interesting. So we've been talking a lot about mothers and the role of motherhood mm-hmm. In the series, and Walt's relationship with Skylar. We'd never meet his mom. We never meet any of his family apart from the immediate family, his wife and kids and his in-laws. But what we're told about the mother is that she's really overbearing, and he says, like, it's difficult to get a word in edgewise. And they're joking at one point. He says that he's going to have to listen to how Juanita hid her ashtray. And something that never occurred to me was like, well, you know, when he was first diagnosed with cancer, they were like, you never smoked. This doesn't make sense. And Skylar's like, maybe it was from the lab. Maybe it was from growing up in a house full of secondhand smoke, huh?
Yeah, I don't know. I never made that connection either. But that's interesting for that reason, but also because of him being so against smoking. I mean, that just kind of reinforces mm-hmm. how strained his relationship with his mother is. Like, he brings up the ashtray. That's obviously something that bothered him, you know, as a kid, maybe it was her smoking. And you know, it's just it seems like really obvious in retrospect to see that, you know, there's like some really strange feelings between him and his family. And yet, you know, you bring it up that we never see her. And I feel like the way that they do this, it's pretty credible, right? Because mm-hmm. you know, you could, if either one of them was saying this and the other one wasn't like going hand in hand, you know, like you might think, oh, well, maybe that's a little bit of exaggeration. You know, like Skylar, she might not like her mother-in-law because her mother-in-law, you know, is weird about her son or something. You know, like there's a way that it could be distorted if it was just through the lens of her experience or whatever. But because they're both pretty much in agreement that his mother sucks, like, you kind of believe it, right?
Yeah.
Like, you don't really need to actually meet her. It's just pretty effective way to show us that he won't be, you know, he won't be going to actually see her anytime soon.
Yeah, and it's also a good plot point because when Skylar's dropping him off at the airport, he's like, you can call anytime. And he says that knowing she won't. And she even says, and risk talking to your mother. Yeah, it would have to be some big emergency. So it really is the perfect cover in more ways than one. It lets him get out of town for a couple days. And he knows that Skylar isn't going to be, you know, interfering in any way because she doesn't want to get involved with that part of the mother. She doesn't want to deal with the mother.
Uh-huh.
But I guess I was thinking more in terms of like who Walt is and how he was perhaps raised. And I mean, we only get a couple of lines about the mother, but this is someone that obviously isn't very close to him. She lives in a different state. We get an idea that she's in like a nursing home or assisted living of some kind. And it's not someone he speaks to regularly. She doesn't even know he has cancer at this point. So I feel like, you know, upon more reflection, it might also tell us something a little bit about Walt and Skylar's relationship and why he may have initially been attracted to someone like Skylar, who is very mothering, right?
Yeah.
Because maybe, I don't know, maybe he was missing that in his life. It sounds like his mom was a really overbearing, dominating person. So interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. I think it's probably more interesting in the moment when you first watch this, because there's always the potential that she'll become a part of the story at some point. But I mean, watching it now, we know that that's never going to happen. So yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say she does get mentioned one more time.
Uh-huh.
And that's when Skylar figures out that he never actually went to go see his mother. And that's when she breaks up with him pretty much. I don't remember exactly what episode that is, but that's when one of the other times he follows her out to the car and right after his surgery with the second cell phone. And she starts figuring everything out and she wants him to move out. And she's like, I called your mother and it turns out you never went. So that's the only other time, as far as I can recall, that she gets mentioned.
You're listening to Growth, Decay, Transformation. We'll be right back.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Let's get cooking. We're back with more Growth, Decay, Transformation.
Yeah, and you know, this episode, it really is, you know, a ton of it is out and it's better for it. I mean, I really like the time we see with just Jesse and Walt. But it really efficiently moves through, like, touching on all the bases before they go, you know. Like I said, we see a quick shot of Saul, we see a quick shot of Jane, we see a little bit of Skylar, you know what I mean? Hank and Marie are there, you know, like they're involved. Like we get a little check-in from everyone before we sort of go out and, you know, they're isolated in the desert together.
And I thought it was a nice contrast between Walt and Skylar in bed, and then you get the scene of Jesse and Jane in bed, and they're on those yellow sheets, and the sun is streaming in. They're a young couple, happy in love. They're giddy, and you know, planning their day. And again, we talked a lot about how just doomed this relationship already is, and how tragic it is. But you know, in a different world, had they gone to that museum, you know, how different their lives have been.
It's rough later whenever after they do the cranking, you know, for all that time, and it starts just for a moment and then it cuts out. I think that's when he sort of slumps over the thing and says, why didn't I just go to Santa Fe, right?
Yeah.
Such a devastating little moment there.
And they do eventually they do get to the museum at some point, because I know Jesse has a flashback at some point.
I think that's in El Camino too, isn't it?
Oh, is that? I can't remember if it's in El Camino or in the series.
Yeah.
I go back and watch this one scene from El Camino, the one where like they are at the hotel and then they go and have they're at a buffet. So that's supposed to happen once they get the RV started before he takes them back to the airport. Did you go back and watch it?
I didn't watch it this time. I watched it. I watched the whole movie not too long ago. I think my takeaway was that it's one of the more decent Walt scenes between mm-hmm. them. You know, like where he's it, like this. He's not quite as unreserved as he is in the RV later in this episode, but he's still kind of in that space, maybe.
So in that scene, we see Jesse taking a bath, and then he's on the phone with Jane in his nice cold hotel room, and then they walk down to this cafe, the Owl Cafe, I think it was called, and the conversation that they have is Walt asking Jesse what he wants to do, because now like they think they have all this money and mm-hmm. you know they both are kind of operating under this idea that Walt is his time is numbered, right? His mm-hmm. days are numbered, he's gonna die. So they're talking about Jesse's future, and Walt is encouraging him to go to college, and they're talking about business school. And Walt at one point, he looks out the window rather wistfully at the, I guess those are the Sandia Mountains, and you see the RV in the parking lot, and mm-hmm. He tells Jesse how lucky he is that he gets to start anew, start fresh. And that's about it for that scene. I mean, I don't think it really adds a lot to our understanding of this particular episode. I think it, you know, adds to Jesse's story, though. And yeah. It makes it a little sadder, thinking about like if things had gone differently for him. And in El Camino, at one point, he tells Ed, you know, you'll never know how sorry I am that I didn't leave that one day that you were supposed to pick me up. And I'm sure, you know, Jesse's just filled with regrets, of course, by the end.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I think about it like you were saying about how Jesse and Jane, how they're, you know, they're young and in love, and it's, you know, it's real at that point, you know what I mean? And it is a thing, like if only, you know, they were able to go down that road or whatever. And it's contrasted so perfectly by the way that Walt just sort of assumes that she's, you know, some piece of, you know, he said, what's he say? He says,
stripper.
Yeah, he said, that's all I need is for Skylar to call and a stripper answers. You know, it's just such mm-hmm. such a crude and just thoughtless comment to make. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. Yeah, the way that all just sort of underlines like their relationship and just the whole idea that, yeah, he should have just not answered the phone and went to Santa Fe and lived a completely different life, you know?
Walt is so mean to him.
Yeah, it's really like
he's so mean.
I guess I always noticed that, you know, but when I'm rewatching it, like when those little lines like that, those ones really turn me against Walt in a way that they never used to. It's just pointlessly cruel, you know what I mean? Like there's no reason to have an opinion on Jesse's new friend, you know, who you haven't met except for, you know, outside of the building where she came off as completely reasonable and somewhat responsible for that matter, you know?
Mm-hmm. I don't think he realizes that that's the girlfriend.
I guess that's probably true. But still, I mean, just to be that, to think that low of him, like, you know, there's several lines in this, you know, he says.
So what does he say? Smoking pot, eating Cheetos, and masturbating doesn't count as plants in my book, you know?
Yeah.
So, and yeah, referring to Jane as a stripper. Of course, when Jesse throws the water on the generator and he's like, oh, that's the problem. You and thinking, we figured it out, you know? So, I mean, that was a stupid move. And Jesse says, you know, excuse me for thinking on my feet. And, there were two excuse me's in this episode. So the first excuse me is Skylar when she says, you know, excuse me for being hopeful, right? When they're talking about, their different attitudes. And then Jesse's excuse me for thinking on my feet. And I think that really speaks to Walt's ego and how sure he is of himself and how just how obsessed he is with like thinking that he is always right and everyone else is always wrong. Yeah. But, you know, the truth is he does need Jesse. And this is something we've talked about. This is something that Jesse even recognized at some point. Like, Walt, you need me. Really, you do. Mm-hmm. And he does. He does. But you know, the way he treats him and the way he talks down to him and constantly belittles him, I think is part of the way he manipulates Jesse. Because, you know, Jesse, and this is something we have also talked about before, looks up to Walt and wants to please him. So I don't know, maybe in some like, you know, psychological way, trying to prove to him that he's more than that, you know, F student that, you know, didn't give a shit in school. You know, he's got something to prove.
Yeah,
to Walt, to the world, to his family, to himself. You know, it's unfortunate though that this is how he's going about it.
Absolutely, yeah. The one, you said that he mentioned it, and that's true. Or you said that he needs him, and that's true. I mean, right from the beginning of this whole plan, he tells him he needs him to go shopping. That's probably going to take a whole day in and of itself. That's something that Walt wouldn't have been able to do. Obviously, he doesn't coordinate the storage of the RV and everything else. You know what I mean? Like, there really isn't a way that he could have pulled this off without Jesse. And I'm sure he understands that on some level. But like you say, his attitude is that, you know, this is all, anything good that happens is all because of his plans, or, you know, his superior intellect, for lack of a better term, you know. And and there is, I mean, you do see that here in this episode. You see this this moment where things are going right, like when they pull it off, mm-hmm. whenever they labor and they get out there, they get everything together, and they have this huge yield of dope that they're going to sell, and it's going to solve all their problems. And you see them closer in that moment than really, you know, many other points in the story. Like, they're celebrating together, and they realize that, you know, there is teamwork involved and that they accomplish something. But of course, you know, that all goes out the window whenever Jesse decides to put those keys into the ignition to keep them safe. After being berated, you know, for putting them on the workstation, which seems like a pretty fine place to put them if you really think about it. That's just like needlessly needing to want to control your partner there. But I mean, I think, you know, there's you could see things from Walt's point of view here too. I mean, this is a situation where you can see the worst being brought out in him. You know, like, he does mm-hmm. think he's dying. We kind of acknowledge the fact that he's resigned himself to the fact that this is like a last hurrah, you know, like he just needs to pull this off because he's going to die. I mean, those are not, I mean, who's going to be acting their best under those conditions? I mean, that's why this is an interesting premise for the episode and why, you know, it works so well. But yeah, those little lines, those little jabs, man, they're really sharp, and they cut, and they make this character a lot less likable when you know where it's headed.
You know, that is a good point though. The stress that he is under helps us understand it a little bit better. I mean, it doesn't excuse it, but it helps us understand it. And of course, Jesse is his punching bag. Jesse's the only person who he can talk to about anything, really.
He's the only one that knows everything that's going on, you know?
Yeah, and Jesse even figures out when he's being lied to, right? Like, the whole, like, how he's able to figure out that the methylamine isn't really bad. Jesse's able to pick up on some of Walt's deceptions. And just one other thing that gets glossed over in the episode, you did mention it when you were giving the synopsis, but Walt hooked up the battery wrong to the generator. And, you know, he made a pretty stupid mistake. Had it been Jesse that hooked it up wrong, that would have been, you know, another a tirade of, you know, more insults and you know, just beating up on Jesse for that mistake. But, you know, Jesse mentions, I understand that you hooked up the battery wrong, you know, but he's not like really rubbing his face in it the way that Walt rubs his face in every mistake that he makes. So I thought he was a little humbled.
Yeah, because if you think about it, Walt fires back so quick and it really underlines the power differential, you know, the dynamics they have. Like, yeah, it kind of reminds me of, like, this is completely unrelated, but, you know, the idea that when you're younger as a man, you know, and an old man is sort of like, you know, in your face or being, you know, really disrespectful just because of the fact that you're younger or whatever. And you think, you know, hey, I'm actually young and healthy and I can probably take this guy, but you also respect that there's some old guy energy that's inside there that'll probably come out in a way that
old guy energy.
Yeah. That, like, this, there's like some kind of, like, you know, genetic, you know, wisdom or muscle memory or something that's going to come out, and, you know, that's on reserve, like, that you just haven't built up yet in your life, so that even though it looks like you should be able to, you know, defend yourself, you just sort of feel like, no, it's not going to work. This guy's going to pull out something, you know, and I feel like that's sort of, you know, yeah, he did. He made a big mistake there. But does Jesse have the, you know, like, does Jesse win anything by, like, you know, winning that argument? Not really. You know what I mean? He's just going to get more, you know, he's just going to get turned around on him and be about him. So you kind of see why he brings it up and then just lets it go.
Yeah. Speaking of old man energy, what you were just describing reminded me of that scene early on in the series in the first season when they go to the clothing store to get Junior some pants, and you know how those kids are teasing Junior, and then Walt comes around and, you know, he's challenging them and they back off. So I think that's a perfect illustration of what you were just describing.
Yeah.
ready to go, punk.
Yeah.
but something else that I think is worth mentioning is that Jesse's actually full of some good ideas, even if he's unintentionally full of good ideas. So, like that he's actually the one that comes up with the idea that we should build a battery.
And of course,
that leads... Yeah. That's such a great line. And listening to the Insider podcast, this is something that wasn't in the script, actually. And it was something that Aaron Paul came up with, and they'd already closed the gates for the day. They had wrapped. And Aaron came up with the idea, and I guess he told the camera guys that he wanted to try it, and they called Michelle back in, and they're like, we got to do this one thing, and they did it. And Vince Gilligan wasn't aware of that until, like, he was watching it in the editing room. And so he had no idea that the line was in there, and Kelly Dixon said that he laughed so hard he almost fell off the couch at that line. So I thought that was pretty cool. Yeah, a little improv line there. And, of course, Jesse comes up with some other good ideas throughout the series. Like, it's his idea when Mike and Walt are bickering over the laptop.
Yeah.
And he comes up with the idea for the magnets. So he does have some good ideas along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. And the sad part about that is like what we talked about way back when we were talking about the first couple of episodes, and it's how he can't even really trust himself with those ideas. Like, he really needs to get validation. You know, that's what he wants for having those ideas. And you know, he's in this situation with a person that isn't really, you know, ever going to give it to him, you know, which is always tragic for a setup. There's a bunch of great, you mentioned in your overall impressions that this is like, you know, the kind of like a, like peak banter between these two, and I would agree completely. I guess, you know, by this many episodes, they've gotten into the groove of how to be them, you know, to go back and forth naturally, and it comes out and it all feels so like it's funny and it's ridiculous at times, but it all feels completely natural also, you know. Don't forget your pants. We'll be back right after this short break.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
For Prestige, me and Aaron are still extending our Shogun Afterglow with part 3 of our discussion of the 1980s TV miniseries. Last week absolutely shocked our sensibilities with Lord Toranaga doing the tango. What delights and horrors will await us this week?
Then for Pulp, this Friday join us for our latest prep session for House of the Dragon Season 2 as we take another look at the key differences between the text of Fire and Blood the on-screen action for Season 1, and what they mean for the characters, story, and setting. Get your Valyrian steel sharpened for the new season.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, a very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
We're back with more DDT.
Okay, so you mentioned the Insider podcast earlier, which I tried to sort of side listen to this week when I was doing something else, and it turns out that this one had a really weird mix where you could hear Vince Gilligan. He was talking directly into the microphone, and then all the other people involved, I think Sam Catlin and Michelle McLaren were there, but I couldn't really hear their responses that well. And so I wanted to ask you, because you said you listened to it, I thought they said something about Aaron Paul not drinking water while he was filming, I guess, to kind of get into the spirit of becoming dehydrated. Was that true?
Yeah, so that's something that I don't know that she mentioned that he actually drank water on set, but for like, I guess in prep ahead of time, like he wanted to get into like the feeling of what it feels like to be really dehydrated. So yeah, he tried to go, she didn't specify how long, but he went for some period of time without drinking to get into, I guess, method acting. I don't know. He wanted to know what it really felt like. But something else that they talked about on the Insider podcast was how they actually went about filming a lot of these scenes. So it's they did actually go out for some exterior shots in the desert, not too far from their Q studios. But they also have they had the interior on a soundstage. So they talked a little bit about that, and that's something that they built for the very first episode that they still had. And so like when Jesse goes and closes the blinds at one point, that's when they transitioned to inside, because while they were filming out in the desert, apparently the sun sets really quickly in the desert. So you have about 15 minutes sort of thing. So it's a mixture of both like on location, on stage, and they were also talking about how like they used sunset filters to try to really stretch those sunsets out.
Mm. A couple of things about that, because I do remember hearing Vince saying something about the dimensions being different on the RV. And that's true. That is one thing that I recognized when I went back and watched 611, Better Call Saul 611 last week, that when Saul is in there with them and they're, you know, he's holding the round bottom flask and all that, that's clearly, that looks so much bigger to me at this point than what I was used to seeing from Breaking Bad. I mean, it all looks fine. It all looks like the exact same thing, but that looks like the soundstage to me that they built rather than the actual RV, which was interesting to pick up on.
Yeah, that was a big point of contention when Better Call Saul aired that episode. I know a lot of people were upset about that. Got a lot of comments on it on my YouTube video for that one. They were like, "Oh, RV took me out." Yeah, Jesse's too old. The RV's too big.
Yeah, I saw a lot about Jesse being too old, but I guess I didn't notice that until I watched it this time. And it was just because I was watching so much Breaking Bad with you and going up to this that it stood out. So, you know, one of the things that is funny about this is that this was envisioned as a bottle episode, which is like, you know, the thing that I see people complain about so much, you know, covering TV shows is, you know, this idea that, you know, whenever they have a character focused episode, like, you know, where something doesn't necessarily move the plot in the same way that the average episode does. I mean, obviously they do that for budgetary concerns and, that's why it's kind of funny that this one was supposed to be that. Like whenever Vince had the idea, he thought they were going to shoot the whole thing inside the RV on the soundstage, and it didn't turn out to be that way. But I think the script, you know, I think the script is written in that way, though, is that like we're going to check off these, we're going to check off all of the other characters, you know, check in and see them. But then we're going to give Walt this situation that he's going to be dealing with internally. And then it goes back to that idea of process episodes, right? Like where he works through that and they have a problem, like he has his problem internally. They run into a problem whenever the battery dies. And we see him, you know, this is the in-between stuff, right? That Vince talks about how, you know, he really likes the way this, you know, instead of just rushing from one thing to the next, he likes to show the parts in between where the characters work through and you see the effects of this stuff. And this is like kind of quintessential, right? I mean, this is, you know, this is like I said, you hear people complain about this idea of a bottle episode, but in spirit, that's what we see here. And you know, this is, you know, great television. This is, you know, as far as everything that this character is going to do later is, you know, enhanced by this hour that we, or 45 minutes or whatever we spend with him in this one place where, you know, nothing really happens. You know, if you're looking at it with a negative viewpoint, you know.
But a lot does happen, and I think you just made that point, right? So, I mean, it is a neatly contained episode. So, like, they have the problem of being stuck in the desert, and then they resolve that within the allotted time frame of this one episode. So, it's nicely wrapped up at the end, and that's why I think I find that final shot of him punching the paper towel dispenser so provocative, because it also leaves the series at this point, like, hanging in the balance, like, well, what happens now, right? So, like, he's about, what, $100,000 shy of his goal for how much money he wants to make. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but now he's faced with, like, the prospect of having to live longer than he anticipated. And what is he going to do with that time? And, you mentioned budgetary constraints as it relates to bottle episodes. And something they also talked about on the Insider podcast is how this actually ended up being, I think, the most expensive episode of the whole season.
Yeah, I think that's what he said, right? It was the most expensive one since the pilot. So his plan to make everything self-contained and save a bunch of money didn't work out at all. Just sort of like, you know, Walt and Jesse's plan to make a bunch of meth and then go hang out and have some Denny's didn't go as planned either.
Mm-hmm. But in thinking of bottle episodes, everyone complains about The Fly. That's probably the most universally disliked episode of the whole series. But even though that one's obviously very different from this one, something that's similar about the two is that we really see Walt really seem to show some regret, some remorse for his mm-hmm. actions. So I think of him like apologizing to Jesse about Jane, and he's sorry. And then he talks about how like the perfect time for him to have died would have been when Skylar was singing that nursery rhyme to Holly right before he left the house, right? Mm-hmm. So I think they're interesting. Both of these episodes are interesting for that alone, right? Like, we really get into this guy's head in a different kind of way, because he seems so removed from what he's doing and the violence that he has wrought and the harm he has caused. And that's something we've been talking about at length on this podcast, right? Like, mm-hmm. is does he really give a shit? And I think I would probably still answer that, like, no, not really. He's able to compartmentalize, but I think we do see glimpses of how he does actually wrestle with some of this. And so I think, you know, to answer that question that I posed to you at the beginning, why does he beat that paper towel dispenser? It's because now he has to actually face his sin. So I also talked a little bit about this idea of remission of sin. And I was thinking just rhetorically of how similar that is to signs of remission, mm-hmm. just with the G there. So the signs and sins of remission, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, this idea that he thought maybe his death would not necessarily absolve him of what he did, but the ends justify the means, right? Like, it doesn't matter what he does because he's just going to die anyway. And he doesn't have to think about what he's actually done.
And he doesn't have to outrun it, you know? He just has to get away with it long enough that he can check out, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's why this is such a smart decision to, because, I mean, even for Breaking Bad standards, this whole thing in the desert wraps up really, really neatly. I mean, it seems like they're scot-free, you know, like they, when you think about them going out in the desert for 4 days, you feel like that should be impossible for him to get away with. But it does seem like that they do. And then he gets great news, which is then, you know, everything is going in the right direction for this character. But all of the, you know, all of those lies, the lies that he talked about whenever he has that confession,
mm-hmm.
those are all going to catch up with him. And he knows that. He's not stupid, right? And the longer he's around, the, you know, the higher the probability that, you know, that's going to come back up. Those are going to come back to haunt him. And just a fantastic journey to put the character on, and then a great way to, you know, end it so that you're just like blown away by the complexity of the situation and the depth of the character. It's it's fantastic.
It is, and it's a huge turning point for Walt. I mean, for many reasons, obvious reasons, right? Like, he's not going to die as soon as he thought he was. So he now has life ahead of him. But I think, you know, in terms of the broader narrative of the story that they're telling, you know, up to this point, Walt has been saying, like, he's doing this for his family, he's doing this for his family, and he's finally accomplished what he set out to do for his family. And so now part of this sentence of more life, and I think that's probably how he might think of it at this point, is like, what is he going to do with himself? And can he keep deluding himself into thinking that he's doing this for his family? Because I think this is like maybe the last maybe moment in the series where he could actually say he did this for his family.
Yeah. And, you know, this kind of unrelated. I mean, it's not unrelated, but I came to this thought through something unrelated, something else I was reading about yesterday. And there's a lot of work that goes into just walking around and looking normal whenever you think you're dying of cancer, right? I mean, the dissonance of that, of being alive and feeling relatively normal, but knowing in the back of your head that it's all coming to an end, you know, like that has an effect on everyone. And I think I think it's impossible to say what that is actually like. I mean, I've never had anything that would compare to that, to, you know, that I could say, okay, well, this is sort of like that time whenever this happened to me. I mean, it's really final, and you know, I don't have anything to draw on to compare that to, but I imagine, and you know, that this is something that if you know that it's coming, then you have to behave a certain way. And whenever that situation changes, then a lot of what you've been stuffing down reemerges, right? Like, because I was thinking about this other story this other show that I'm covering, and this idea that, you know, people, they go and they have to do this thing, and it is basically a death sentence, and they know it, and wondering why they comply. And I was reading something that the author said, that they watched a documentary about people on death row or something to that effect, and the mm-hmm. and the idea of, like, if you were in prison and you were getting a death sentence, and it was that direct, it wasn't this idea of like cancer or whatever, but they're going to take you and that, you know, they're going to come and they're going to say, okay, it's time. And you're going to get up and you're going to walk and you're going to follow them. And you would think that you would go kicking and screaming, but almost nobody does, you know, because by the time they get to that point, they've already been living with that reality to the degree that they can't really imagine doing anything different anymore. Like, they've basically given up, you know what I mean? And that's an interesting way to think about, you know, Walt, if he was a normal human. I don't know if we would apply it the same way, because he's a TV character and they have ideas about, you know, where he's going to go as a result of this information. But, you know, I think that, yeah, it's a really complex and interesting thing to think about.
You mentioned the idea of people on death row. I mean, there are occasions, and it's not actually that uncommon, where like the governor of whatever state will commute their sentence or give them a stay or something like that. So they think they're going to die on X day, but then they get a stay, and then, you know, who knows when they're going to die. I imagine that's probably pretty torturous. And as you were talking about that, I was thinking of an X-Files episode called Beyond the Sea, and it's about the serial killer who's psychic, played by, I forget the guy's name, but he was in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He played, what was that kid's name, Bibbit, the one with the stutter?
Yeah, I don't know what the actor's name is, but I know you're talking about.
I can't think of it. That guy plays this, it's a great episode, plays this serial killer, and he's on death row, and he talks about like going to, and he got his, he got stay before. So he's had to like make that walk a couple times. And I don't know, that just made me think of it. It's pretty interesting. He talks about what it's like to walk that mile and how haunting that is.
You want to move on to favorite line?
Sure. Okay, yeah, so for favorite line for this one, this was hard to choose. There were so many really good lines, and there's a lot of funny lines, but I went with the "I have it coming, I deserve this."
Yeah, I think that's a standout. I probably would have picked that if I hadn't seen that you did in the notes.
Sorry.
It's fine. It's one of those ones where it's hard to compete with. It's really a it's so true and so unbelievable to hear the character say it at the same time. So it's really powerful.
Mm-hmm. What about you? What was your favorite?
I went with when he says he's doing the cranking thing and he says it has to work. You understand? And it, you know, the line itself isn't anything out of the ordinary. But I really like how that this is sort of the moment when Jesse starts to put together all the pieces, right? Where he starts to realize that this isn't really about the methylamine. This is about something else. And, it's just a moment where by itself, it probably doesn't do anything. But with all the accumulated things that have happened over this period of time while they're there, it's a big moment for Jesse to kind of put things together.
Yeah. Yo, lie much?
Yeah. Yeah. And my runner up was whenever they're talking about the batteries and he's figuring out what Walt's saying and Walt's excited, you know, because he knows how the battery works. And he says, and Nick, and it's what? And he says, wire. Yeah. As the element. He says, what's the element, the final element or whatever? And he says,
what shall we use as a, what shall we use as a conductor for this? And he's like, and he's holding the piece of copper.
Yeah.
So good. And Jesse's face, his face as he's explaining, like, you know, the diode and its anode, et cetera. And Jesse's just like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, he's so pumped up. Yeah, there's a ton of them. There's so many funny ones.
My runner-up was a robot because that's just so funny. That's also good.
Also fantastic. What about a shot? What was your favorite shot?
So we already mentioned that there were a lot of really, really great ones in this one. So the cook montage. I also really love the song that they used over the cook montage. And I wrote that down. That was called One by One by the Black Seeds. I thought that was really great. And when they're first driving out there, they're playing Good Morning Freedom by Blooming. So really good music in this one.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the cook montage. I love all the white shots of the RV in the desert. And there was one shot of like the sun setting and like the colors, the oranges and the browns, like matched the stripes on the bounder perfectly. Mm-hmm. It was just a really cool shot. I also love, we both, I think, are fond of the shots where we get like object point of view. And
yeah,
there's one
absolutely.
Where the camera is underneath the glass tray where they're doing the pour with the blue meth. But I had to go. And actually, this one was a toss-up. I really wasn't sure which one to go with. So I like the one of Walt, the wide shot of him sitting in the field, and all you just see is, like, from his shoulders up, he's got the towel on his head.
Yeah.
You know, I already talked a little bit about, like, the biblical overtones of remission of sin. Kind of looks looks like he's out there meditating or something like that, like he's having a come-to-Jesus moment. I really love that shot, but I had to go with the paper towel dispenser.
Yeah. Both of those are big contenders. I thought the first time I went through, I was thinking a lot about the towel. And then the second time I did get an appreciation for the shot of him in the field. But I ended up going with the airport shot. And it's partially because we do see that again. We see that with Hank and we see that with Kim in Better Call Saul. Those turning point moments at the old airport there. And but also because in this one, we see the meth lab pull up.
Yeah.
And Bryan Cranston does the best angry walk whenever he goes. He goes from, like, you have this beautiful shot, you know, this low shot with the, you know, the whole, you can see his whole body there, and you can see, you know, the expanse of this parking lot, you know, but you don't really see, you know what I mean? It's just the setup of the shot is, then the one that they go back to over and over again is perfect. But then, yeah, when you follow that up with him seeing the RV and then walking over to just scream at Jesse, like,
you brought a meth lab to the airport.
such a good little sequence there. You know, it's like his little bit of quiet time, you know, where he thinks about his, you know, his plan to try to pull it all together for his family one last time before, you know, he gets the inevitable bad news. And then, oh boy, God, I can't believe Jesse is pulling up in the meth lab to take.
Yeah, you know why I love that shot and that line. You brought a meth lab to the airport. Jesse kind of throws that line back at him later when Walt brings a bomb into a hospital in the diaper bag, and he's like, "You brought a bomb into a hospital." So you know, Walt is, you know, he's. We mentioned earlier how he thinks he's, like, you know, better than everyone, but, you know, he makes some stupid mistakes and has some stupid ideas too. So I don't know. He's just a judgmental asshole. And I kind of alluded to this a little bit in the teaser, but just something else that I wanted to maybe end with here is, like, you should be kind to objects. Because we see Walt beat the shit out of this paper towel dispenser. And then, of course, he sees that paper towel dispenser. I think it's in Gliding Over All. I don't remember exactly which episode it is in season 5 when he finds out that his cancer is back and he sees that paper towel dispenser still dented. And I love how they also did that with Jimmy and Saul. So in the very first episode, he kicks that garbage can by the elevators in HHM. And of course, we see many shots of that dented a garbage can up until the point where they're there for Howard's memorial and they've replaced it. But Jimmy gets caught in a garbage can. He gets caught in a dumpster. That's where Gene is finally, you know, picked up by the police. And I was thinking again of, like, that the not that a paper towel dispenser is the same thing as a vat, but that's how Walt meets his end. So with a similar looking object.
Yeah. And I always thought about those, you know, how you... You know, how they're both lashing out, right? They're both, but it ends up leaving this mark that they can't escape. You know, they have to see that again later and be reminded of where they were at that time. Like, if Walt doesn't punch this thing, if he just walks away and, you know, counts to 10 or whatever a more healthy choice might have been, he wouldn't have to be reminded of it every single time he sees that. And it's the same thing with Jimmy, right? Every time he walks into HHM, he's always walking in there thinking that, you know, defeat is just around the corner, but he has a perfect reminder of him losing his cool that he sees on the way in, you know?
Yeah. And that's why I highlight this, because with Walt punching this paper towel dispenser at this moment, at this point in time, it's because he's upset he's going to live, right? Yeah. Like, I think it's grief that he's feeling. It's probably a lot of things, as you said, P. It's more than just one thing. I don't think we can just say it's just this or it's just that. I think it's a mixture of grief, maybe a little relief. I don't know, but certainly when he sees that paper towel dispenser again, when he learns that his cancer is back, he doesn't want to die at that point. You know, his whole outlook and view has changed. Now this is someone that isn't ready to lay down and die. So it's quite a shift from here, where he was ready to go, and then when he comes back, it's a different feeling for him. And of course, he's done so many horrible things at that point.
Yeah.
Like, really, really awful things, and he really, really does deserve it at that point, right? So it's an interesting callback. Maybe we'll talk about it when we get to that one, huh?
Yeah, definitely. I think we will. I think that pretty much wraps this episode up. This is a shorter podcast today, but I think I got everything that I wanted to talk about. How about you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we could probably keep going, but there's, I think we touched on everything that's really important in this one. Because again, it's a bottle episode.
We didn't bring up the Funyuns.
Yeah.
I love
how Walt like takes a bite and then he throws it. I love that quick little shot, like how he's like going to try it and then he throws it away. Like, nope.
And I am in agreement with Walt, though. He did a pretty bad job of shopping for that trip. Like everything that was coming out of there was there was not a lot of, nutrition involved in that thought process.
No. Yeah. Yep. And certain the fact that Walt remarks at the very beginning of the episode when he sees that he only brought 10 gallons of water, he's like, you only brought 10 gallons? And Jesse's like, are you going to bathe in it?
Yeah.
So yeah, they drew our attention to that. I think like a sort of Chekhov's gun, right? Like whatever they show you in the first act has to be important in like the third act sort of thing. So that's certainly true.
That would have been amazing if they would have figured out a way to make a battery out of Funyuns then.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to follow our podcast and hit that bell for notifications. Please rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. If you wish to support GDT, you can find our Patreon at patreon.com/growthdecaytransformation.
Yeah, and look us up on Twitter. You can connect with us there at Breaking Bad GDT. And you can always write us. We always like to hear your feedback. You can reach us at breakingbadgdt@gmail.com.
Yeah, let us know what you think. Why do you think Walt punches that paper towel dispenser? What do you think's going on in his head? Let us know. All right, so thanks for listening. Join us next week, and we will be discussing Over.